Welcome to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Chicago, Friday, July 9. But go back with me to June, 2 weeks ago today, when the vote to take Britain out of the European Union shattered the markets globally and certainly domestically here in the United States. We saw a tremendous drop in markets in response to that British vote. But here we are 2 weeks later, and today the S&P briefly traded above its record close, but then ended less than a point below it and was just 3 points away from the all-time intraday high of 2134 reached in May of 2015. So really quite a comeback for the market in the 2 weeks that we had Brexit. All of that happened because of a much larger than expected increase in job growth in June, confirming in the minds of a lot of traders and investors the U.S. economy has regained speed after a first quarter lull. After a dismal payrolls report for May that raised concerns about the health of the economy, U.S. employers added 287,000 jobs in June, beating market expectations for the first time in 4 months. And one trader said, if earnings season, which begins in earnest next week, provides investors with a strong outlook, the S&P will likely break the record and has a chance at rallying from there. He said the old high has been resistance, and if you break it and see earnings growth and relatively good guidance, people will probably try to get in front of that. For the week, the three major indices posted gains of more than 1%, and the S&P hit a session high of 2131.71, briefly trading above its record closing high of 2130.82 set in May of 2015. And then we always watch the volatility index, the worry factor, the fear gauge, has swung wildly since the June 23rd vote by Britain to leave the European Union. Today, it ended at its lowest level since late May. So now, in light of the employment report, traders are sort of dimming down their feeling for a rate hike increase by the Federal Reserve Board. As a matter of fact, the markets, according to some analysts, are saying we will not see an interest rate increase until December. And this month, of course, on July 26 and 27, the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee will hold its meeting to discuss the economy and to discuss the outlook for interest rate increases. Well, there were other things that happened this week that we kept an eye on, and before we look at some of those, though, let's take a look at what we're going to see next week, because next Monday we'll start the next earnings report season, and Alcoa will kick off the season with its second quarter results, and that will happen on Monday. But other reports next week, well, J.P. Morgan reports second quarter results on Thursday, and J.P. Morgan shares and other bank stocks, then actual second quarter results, analysts say, will probably be doing better. The bank could also be pressed to reduce other spending because interest rates are expected to remain low. Wells Fargo and Company, the third largest U.S. bank by assets, expected to report on Friday, slightly higher second quarter net income and revenue. Also on Friday, Citigroup reports second quarter profit. Analysts expect that number to be about 20% lower than a year earlier. As far as government reports, after the Labor Department payroll report today, well, can anything be as exciting next week? The Commerce Department will report on Friday, according to analysts, that retail sales edged up 0.1% in June. Also on Friday, a report from the Labor Department expected to show the consumer price index went up 0.3% in June. Other data on tap next week include the industrial production report for June, wholesale trade and retail inventory figures for May. That could have implications for the second quarter GDP forecast. And then on Friday, industrial output expected to have rebounded 0.2% last month after falling in May. And wholesale inventories report out on Tuesday, expecting an increase of 0.2%. And then on Wednesday, the Federal Reserve will issue its so-called beige book. That's a compendium of anecdotes on the health of the economy drawn from the central bank's sources across the nation. And a slew of speaking engagements next week for Federal Reserve regional presidents. It looks like all of them are going to be on the road. And, of course, they will always get attention from traders on Wall Street. Some other reports due out next week. BlackRock, the world's largest asset manager, will be reporting on Thursday. Yum Brands, the owner of KFC, Pizza Hut, and Taco Bell brands, expected to report second quarter results on Wednesday, pretty much in line with average expectations. And then the number three railroad in the United States, CSX Corporation, will be reporting next week on Wednesday, expected to report a second quarter profit in line pretty much with analyst expectations. So it will be a busy week as we kick off the earnings season and also with a lot of speeches by presidents of regional Federal Reserves, and we'll be looking to getting the beige book minutes. This week we did get a couple of earnings reports that people like to watch. PepsiCo reported a better-than-expected profit for the second quarter, helped by lower raw material costs as well as strong demand for Frito-Lay snacks and new beverages in North America. New drinks such as Propel-flavored water and Naked cold-pressed juice and snacks under its Simply brand also helped drive sales, and they succeeded in cutting some costs. PepsiCo's cost of sales fell 6% in the 3 months ended June 11. Another stock that we watch, Walgreens, or I guess now we should say Walgreens Boots Alliance, the drugstore operator reported a better-than-expected profit for the third quarter, helped by cost-cutting and higher sales of Medicare Part D drugs in the United States. The company, which also owns the Boots drugstore chain, which is based in the United Kingdom, raised its lower end of its full-year adjusted profit forecast. Some other notes that traders watch this week. The Department of Justice has significant concerns about Aetna's proposed acquisition of health insurer Humana. That's according to a source familiar with the situation. Shares of Humana went down more than 11% on Thursday when that announcement was made. Aetna's purchase of Humana would combine two of the largest providers of Medicare Advantage plans for elderly people. And investors have long been concerned the deal might pose a competition issue for antitrust regulators. So that remains to be seen. Now, you can fly to Cuba now that our relationship is warming up a little bit, but if you want to go to Cuba from Chicago, you can't do it. The U.S. has tentatively approved flights on 8 U.S. airlines to Havana as early as this fall. American Airlines Group got the biggest share of the limited routes, according to the Transportation Department. The decision, coming about a year after the U.S. and Cuba reestablished diplomatic relations, includes 35 flights per week on American. That's the biggest U.S. airline in Latin America. Its rival for Caribbean travel, JetBlue Airways, was granted 27. The department expects to reach a final decision on the routes later this summer after reviewing any objections. It also recommended flights to Havana on Delta Airlines, United Continental Holdings, Southwest Airlines, Alaska Air Group, Spirit Airlines, and Frontier Airlines. But the airports that will be making the takeoffs for Cuba will not include Chicago's O'Hare Field. And a big acquisition in the food industry occurred this week, too, when France's Danone said it would double the size of its U.S. business by buying organic foods producer White Wave Foods Company in a deal worth about $12.5 billion. The purchase will help the French company pursue affluent consumers by adding White Wave's popular health food offerings such as Silk almond milk. Well, now, wait a minute. There is no almond milk. It's a beverage. I never milked an almond tree in my life. Earthbound Farm Organic Salad and Horizon Organic Milk to its product range also will be part of that purchase. So, quite a bit going on, but the biggest event this week happened today, that employment report from the Labor Department that ended the week on a very positive note, certainly far different from 2 weeks ago. Well, Max Armstrong joins us to talk markets and weather particularly. He'll talk to Jerry Goodell of the Price Futures Group when we continue on the market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Jerry Goodell joining us in the studio from Price Futures Group in Chicago. Welcome back here, sir. There's been a lot happening and a lot to talk about.
Yes, it has been a very amazingly last month or 6 weeks. We've had a very emotional market early, and now we've got some rains in the eastern U.S. that's tempered things along with some recent reports.
Yeah, three things, I guess, when you stop to think about it. When you include Brexit in that whole scheme of things, it's been kind of a triple witching, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. We had a combination of the June 30th reports along with the British decision to exit the European Union, which has definitely added to the overall uncertainty of the world.
Brexit, of course, really was a surprise, I think, to everybody and the grain market. The other two, you can kind of count on being nervous about those, can't you? Every year, coming into that stocks report and coming into the early July weather.
Exactly. The acreage report always is a little bit of a crazy crapshoot because of the fact that depending on how our weather does for the spring, and sometimes even, unfortunately, the information the producers give to the government doesn't always match up with what really is reality. Like last year, they didn't really cut back their corn and acres as quickly because of the weather happened during early June. And this year, the surprise was that we did not cut back the corn acreages, despite the fact we rallied soybeans $2 to $3. Basically, the early spring weather there in April and early May, before we had our cool down in the eastern Corn Belt, kept people out in the field and got these acres in. Interestingly enough, though, that also did reduce the expansion of acres only to about 1 million acres year over year on soybeans instead of the 1.5 to 2.5 million people we're talking about. Those are interesting numbers. In the stock side of the numbers that came out that same day, we also ended up had probably a very big surprise on the corn side. The number came in at $4.72 billion. That was about 175 to 200 million higher than expecting. You said, golly, what happened? Well, it probably means that we had an underestimate of last year's crop. That probably means we had a bushel higher yield on our yields out there, maybe some slightly higher acreages that we cut back on. Overall, that number, along with kind of a so-so recent ethanol grind number, is likely to mean that when we were anticipating the corn number on old crop to be somewhat stabilized here, and then we had some decline in new crop acreages. Instead, we have extra bushels from this year transferring to next year. And that phenomenon, along with the fact that the yields at this point are going to be close to the USDA's estimates to begin with in July, all of a sudden the 2 billion number that we had last month on new crop numbers is likely to rise somewhere between 175 to 250 million. So we're back around 2.2 billion. So happy days are here again for the people that have plenty of needs for corn.
Let me lob one more bearish thing in there. Did I see the other day that we are exporting less ethanol now? Didn't that show up in the weekly report?
Yeah, I think in the short-term monthly scenario we had. The other twist of it is that because of the fact that the Chinese are not buying the kind of sorghum they did last year, the sorghum side of this thing has been a very strong competitor in the Southwest. And so these ethanol plants that are coming from Kansas down through into the Texas Panhandle are running 50 to 60% of their grind is now sorghum, because it's even cheaper than corn. And you believe how cheap corn can be in some places. Sorghum's even less than that. And so that's competing in our total number of ethanol bushels. Interestingly enough, we're producing plenty of ethanol, and I think also our efficiencies in this whole plant system is also very strong.
Speaking of interrelationships between grains, is corn also fighting a feed wheat challenge?
Definitely, that's a factor that's around the world at this point. Even in the U.S., we've had some issues with that with quality issues, and now this recent rains have hit in the latter part of the harvest in Kansas, and maybe we're going northward. I've heard some problems about the quality of the hard red wheat in that part of the world not being what they'd like to see because of that. But also, I think you're really pointing out the fact that we've had lots of rains in Europe. They've talked about reducing the French crop and things like that. And overall, the world feeds a lot of wheat outside the U.S.
We mentioned Brexit. That, of course, brought strength in the value of the dollar. That's been the big challenge for grains, has it not, in terms of the Brexit reaction?
Definitely. That's what the immediate reaction was, though. Everybody scattered, scurried to the dollar. And at that point, that retook us from the low 90s back up to the mid-90s on the dollar index values. I don't know how you keep it all straight between all the various currencies, but that's my barometer. And that type of situation. The interesting thing about that is that psychologically impact, I don't know how much it's going to make a difference, because in the corn world at least, because of the problems that we've had in the second crop corn in Brazil, they're not going to be exporting their normal supplies from here on until next spring. And so that's why there's a big scurry of getting U.S. corn exports out. And I think they're not going to be as competitive even next spring in our corn exports for the coming year. So I'd anticipate that the wheat side is competitive as hard. The dollar is a very important factor. Beans and corn, I'm not sure, is going to be as dollar sensitive, if you want to say it that way.
Let me come back to weather for just a moment. Let me put this in perspective of where I was this week. I was in Logan County, Illinois. That's between Bloomington and Springfield, right about on the line of what has been very dry versus good moisture in the state of Illinois. Standing out there talking to Jeff Martin and Derek Martin on their farm near Mount Pulaski, the corn stalks had to be 13 feet tall. They're halfway through the pollination. They picked up a nice, gentle, soaking rain earlier this week. Soybeans look to be on track at the moment. They have no problems. There were rains that occurred elsewhere, western Missouri. There were rains that came into areas that have been dry in southern Indiana. Help us get a grasp on, you know, obviously the market indicated to us earlier this week coming out of the 4th of July holiday that all is well with the development of these 2016 crops.
Definitely the areas that we had last week before the weekend event in the northern areas of the eastern Corn Belt were positive. And then the big rain that did occur from eastern Kansas all the way to Indianapolis, definitely a godsend for that area because it had not had much rain. There's a spot in western Illinois that's between Galesburg and Quincy that hasn't had much rain. It kind of stretches across western Iowa and all the way up along the Dakotas and western Minnesota. Interestingly enough, that section of the country still, which is now because of the expanded acres, which a lot of that's come from that part of the world in here this year, is in an area that definitely could use some rain. They're in that 50% or less in the last month. Now, there's been forecasts of rains coming through this week and into next, but most of them seem to be developing in the center part of Minnesota and moving through Wisconsin and on into northern Illinois and on into Indiana. Definitely positive for those areas, but I wonder about some states out there. Actually, just calculating my quick analysis, I thought there was somewhere between 22 and 25% of the U.S. corn still could use a drink out there.
Put that in perspective again. Describe that geography once more for folks who didn't follow it, where you're saying there may be 20 to 25% of the corn crop that is still too dry.
Well, for practical purposes, let's just kind of look at I-35 that runs from Des Moines northward to Minneapolis. That section of Minnesota, that section of Iowa, and maybe some areas of eastern Nebraska, just faintly. But then the big sections of corn and soybeans in the Dakotas are in the eastern half. So you really have most of the corn and soybean areas of the north and south Dakota, western half of Minnesota, and the western half of Iowa. Throw them all together, and, you know, quick analysis, you know, you've got that 20 to 22 million, which relates to approximately 22 to 25% of the crop. But does it mean that the key feature of this thing from going forward is going to be how much heat do we have? And there's been a lot more heat out there than we have in Chicago. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes us analysts look at our air conditioning bill and don't look at the air conditioning bill in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
It was breathtaking how quickly, coming back after the 4th of July, the market wrung out that weather premium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. Well, we were vulnerable, and then we've had this whole scenario this spring of managed money that came into this business. The soybean side had some reality that quickly was understood by the markets here in the U.S. because of the problems in Brazil and Argentina. First dryness and then basically too much rain in Argentina. The corn side of the thing took a while to get going because of the idea that we were going to reduce these acres that we had out here, and also the fact that that maybe our yields were not going to be the 168 bushel trend line. That created ourselves a lot of investment from the outside world, and now, interestingly enough or not, they're looking at last year's performance in the markets, and sometimes people only look back 12 months and they say, well, last year we had a burp and then we came right back down, so I'm out of here.
That's the managed money you're talking
about. Yes, the managed money, the investor money from there, because everyone's looking for returns. And basically, you know, the stock market was doing this and had the emotions and had not really done a lot of things for that. Plus, we continue to have this on again, off again. Are we going to increase in interest rates, which was bothering, I think, investors too.
Assuming that the market is comfortable with the weather scenario at the moment, there is at least one more possibility, isn't there, of a rally this summer if August turns out to be problematic simply because of its importance to the soybean market?
Definitely, definitely. And it's also important to the filling stages of corn, but definitely on the soybean side of things. Right now, the 46.5 bushel yield number with the kind of modest increase we've got going here on acreages at this point suggests that we're really going to keep – the USDA had a number below 300 last month, and there's been talk and expectations that was going to go back over 300.
In terms of the soybean carryout.
Yeah, well, soybean carryout, yes. I'm talking in shop here about the stocks. Thanks for correcting me. From the standpoint of the stocks number at 300, yeah, it makes things reasonable. But if that scenario doesn't look like it's going to stay there and we start moving towards 200, that's when people get quite nervous in the soybeans.
We appreciate the visit. Thank you so much for coming back. Jerry Goodell, Price Futures Group.
Thank you, Max. Always good to visit.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we look at the agricultural commodity world this past week, we certainly saw the volatility in the corn and the soybean market, because we really wiped out a lot of value in that soybean contract and in the corn contract. But coming back today, bargain hunting came into the market. weather concerns. They're now looking at the possibility of some hot and dry weather showing up the last half of the month into the first half of August, according to one analyst. And so as a result, we did get a pretty good bounce today. The pockets of the U.S. Midwest that remain dry despite recent showers still raising some concern about crops in localized areas. But when you look at well over 92 million acres of corn, those dry pockets have to be pretty big to have an impact on the price. So the grain market, we're going to start trading on Monday with the grain market higher at the close today. July wheat will start trading at 420 and three quarters a bushel. After gaining 9¾ cents today, July corn will start the trading week at 349 and three quarters after gaining 13½ cents today. New crop December corn will start at 362½ after gaining 14½ cents. July soybeans Monday will start at 10.89 and three quarters after gaining 36½ cents today, and the new crop November bean contract will start at 10.57 and three quarters after gaining 32¼ cents today. But again, as you heard Jerry Goodell talking with Max, weather will be the main factor going ahead on what happens to these prices, because if we get a good pollinating season, and keep in mind that our TV meteorologist, Greg Solier, last April was saying no drought in his summertime growing picture. He said there'll be some dry times, but then we'll get moisture and we'll get temperature changes. Didn't see any major drought developing, and keep that in mind. He was saying that back in April. The livestock trade, we did get a little bounce in the cattle market. Not much, but it did move higher today. But again, a disappointing factor. Cash cattle in the plains, $119 to $120 per hundredweight, and that's steady to $2 lower than last week. So that really had the down impact on the cattle market today. And fund rolling, it's the Goldman roll, along with the soft cash and wholesale pork prices, weighed on the lean hog trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So Monday, the October lean hog contract will start at $68.62 a hundredweight after dropping 85 cents today. And next week, the July contract, I think, terminates on Tuesday. Cattle, live cattle, the August contract will start Monday at $112.12 after gaining 32 cents a hundredweight today. But the August feeder cattle contract dropped 37 cents today, and so it will start the trading week at $143.25. Keep in mind, too, that USDA will be out with its July crop report on Tuesday of next week. But as I always like to point out, until we get to August, all of the USDA crop projections are based on history. But when we get to the August crop report, that to me is the big one, because that will be based on the acreage numbers we got in the Planet Acreage Report, June 30th, and also based on the supply-demand stocks that we currently have. So keep that in mind when we get to next week's reports and then on to the August report. Cargill made some moves this week. It's a top U.S. meat processor. It said today it will sell two Texas beef cattle feedlots to Friona Industries, based in Amarillo, Texas. Under the deal, Friona Industries will acquire Cargill's cattle feedlots at Bovina and Dalhart, Texas. Cargill said in a statement it will retain ownership of its cattle yards at Yuma, Colorado, and Leodi, Kansas, and of course terms of the pending sale were not disclosed. Earlier this week, Cargill sold off a lot of its ag retail outlets to Agrium, based in Canada. Changes continue in the agribusiness world. Well, we are out of time for another week. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. And thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.